Just one moment.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Thank you again for your time, sir. I would like to ask you primarily about Japan, if that's all right.
Yes, please.
I guess we'll start with current events. And just to get right to the point, Japan, in my view, the Japanese establishment is basically a franchise of the Washington neoconservative deep state. Do you see it this way, and do you see any chance of the situation changing, especially as it regards the war in Ukraine?
So, first of all, I think that after the Second World War, that Japan has totally lost any kind of sovereignty and independence from the United States. This country is occupied. There is the kind of occupational government totally submitted to Washington. And I think that there is no shade of sovereignty in modern days Japan as the result of the event of the loss of the war with the United States. So Russia as well was in the camp of victorious powers, but that element was totally forgotten. And Russia is considered to be a kind of enemy because it was enemy of United States during Cold War, and because Russia is enemy today of the globalists. So, but that is interesting element. So, regarding Japanese government, obviously there should be some sovereign elements in it, but and maybe there are such elements, but they don't dare to show themselves. So they maybe, if for example we presume that United States with the new Republican president Donald Trump, that is quite possible, quite probable that he will win. Maybe there will be the kind of space or a free space that could be filled with in Japan and Japanese establishment with the claim to regain a small portion, small part of this sovereignty, total loss, total in that doesn't exist. And I have some interesting contacts with some very conservative circles in Japan who hope for that. So maybe inside of society, maybe inside of some traditionalist identitarian circles of Japanese society, maybe there are some elements of hope to change the situation, but until now the situation is that is Japan is Israel, but much less sovereign than Israel, is a kind of proxy of United States. I wondered why, because the history of Japan was the history of very proud people with the spirit of sacrifice, with braveness or samurai spirit, absence of fear in front of death. So something incredible has happened after the Second World War, because that was the identity of Japanese culture was replaced, was somehow decomposed and recombined in some very autistic and childish mentality. So that was a kind of mental experiment on Japanese society. And once more than 20 years ago, I have asked my Japanese friend, a professor, a lady, professor of Japanese culture, and she has explained to me that according to her, Japanese consider themselves to be the gods in the body. So the direct descendants of Amaterasu, the goddess. And if someone could win the gods, so they should be the gods themselves. So that is the change in the religious attitude. So Americans are, in the eyes of the Japanese, the gods that have won over native gods. So there is a kind of religious cult of everything American, technology, digital industries. So all that is a kind of kami, the world of kami, or the gods. So that was a very interesting explanation. So the gods could be won only by the stronger gods. So the American gods, and for example, that I have remarked, observed in Japan when I was there once. So the McDonald's are very similar to shrines, to traditional Japanese shrines. So they are covered with some special inscriptions. So you could mistake where there is the Japanese traditional shrine and where is McDonald's. So there is something religious around this, the culture of the gods that have won. That just hypothesis proposed by Japanese professor, a lady professor that was very patriotic and tried to fight somehow against that, but in order to restore the sovereignty and traditional spirit in Japan.
Something that troubles many conservatives here is that the American gods keep losing, and yet the Tokyo establishment still seems to worship those false gods. I mean, the American gods have lost in Vietnam and Afghanistan and Iraq. They're losing now in Ukraine. They're losing in Israel. The American gods haven't won anything since 1945, and yet there's still almost a I think you're right, Professor. There's some sort of almost spiritual belief that the United States is virtuous and just and almost a god. I wonder what it will take for the Japanese establishment to realize that Washington is not a god, closer to a devil, perhaps, but some sort of strange death cult that has nothing to do with traditional Japanese religion or even with geopolitical advantage.
Interesting. So, if we get deeper in the Japanese culture, I think that we could see very important ethical feature of Japanese consciousness. So, the problem is not to serve good master or bad evil master. You should serve good to everybody. So, including when the god is wrong and false, and the master is evil. So, a samurai should follow the path until the end. So, until the final collapse of the Western hegemony, I think the Japanese will be the more loyal followers of this, the composing hegemony. But when the composition will topple and complete. So I think in the moment there will be a kind of return of Japanese gods in the moment, not in the process. So that will be immediately. But until that moment comes, I think the Japanese will follow in spite of weakness, in spite of the failures and defeats of global American hegemony, they will serve as good samurais to bad master. There are so many films about that. So that is a kind of ethical feature of Japanese society, and we could not blame them for that because they are very coherent, very consequent in their attitudes to life, to death. They serve devil, but they serve it in the best way as they could. So, and such thing happens, including in Japanese folklore, in Japanese lore, in Japanese myth, in Japanese story, history. So we could identify very similar elements, and the ethic of the people is the same. So they serve, the Japanese serve wrong god, the failed gods, but they do it in the best way possible.
That's interesting. That's fascinating, Professor Dugan. I'd not heard that interpretation before, but there is an element, it seems, of faithfulness until the end, even when the master is wrong. Washington is clearly wrong, and yet the conservatives, so-called conservatives here, serve Washington as though that were the only master there were. From the Russian perspective, there's an interesting note in your, it's 2015 book here, The Last War of the World Island. There's a note here about pre-World War II and World War II Japan as being a telluocratic nation aligned with Germany and Italy, which I thought was interesting because I'd always assumed that Japan as an island nation would be part of this sort of Atlantic world. And it is now. I mean, it is part of the Atlantean world now. But in World War II and before that, was Japan, I mean, the alliance with the Germany and Italy against the Soviet Union, was this an alliance of telluocracy or was this just an alliance of convenience? I mean, does Japan fit into your world scheme of Eurasia? Is Japan part of Eurasia, do you think? Or how does it fit into your world scheme?
So when I speak about the telluocratic and earth as land power nature of Japan, I regard it in general during the history. For example, there was almost no fleet in Japan. So there was no colonies historically. So that was not the island, but that was the kind of continent, Japanese continent. And Japanese continent inscribed in the global Japan, the globe of Japan. So that was the earth and land power with the typical elements of vertical hierarchy, faithfulness, and sacred values. Mostly that was the heritage of Chinese culture, so of the Buddhist culture, the Confucianist ethics, scripture, all that was taken from continental China, but adjusted, elaborated to Shinto, to traditional Ten no cult, the cult of emperor. And so that was the kind of original mixture with all the telluocratic features. So culture with the telluocratic consciousness of Japanese society. But after the Meiji Revolution, so-called Meiji Revolution, that was the huge amount of the external influence. So the influence of the West at the end of the rule of the samurais. That was not just restoration, but as well modernization of Japan and entering in the opening of its close social and political structure. So that was thalassocratic elements. They appear precisely, the Japanese started to construct fleet, to be involved in the some colonial new Pacific world order, and they have so that was not the direct continuation of the same tradition, but mixture between telluocratic ancient identity of Japanese culture and new elements of thalassocratic Atlanticist American, British influence. But I think that the choosing between Anglo-Saxons and Germans, so Japanese, they have chosen something like telluocracy more than thalassocracy. So that was a kind of but comparing Germany, that was much more telluocratic than Anglo-Saxon world, that was pure Thalassocracy. So Japan has chosen this thalassocratic pole, but the conflict with Soviet Union has destroyed, because Soviet Union was more thalassocratic power in geopolitical sense. So that was contradiction as well on the side of the Germany and on the side of Japan. So the two thalassocratic powers, they have entered in a war against the much more thalassocratic power. So that was a kind of a tragic situation of distribution of geopolitical missions and geopolitical statuses. But after the end of the Second World War, Japan was integrated into purely thalassocratic Anglo-Saxon system and Atlantic system. And we could not see any sign of sovereignty, of this thalassocratic identity, but it should exist somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it is invisible. We could not identify that. But I think that Japan lives under Atlantis' occupation. Blame that for blame Japan for that. It is a kind of tragic issue of history, but I think that secretly, in some way, in some ambience, in some circles, in some group, the alternative identity of Japan continental Japan as continent, Japan as thalassocracy, still survives. It's my guess, I think it should be so, because nothing disappears forever. Something that was will return in the other terms. That is because I'm traditionalist. I believe in eternity as acting power in the history. So eternity. It is the eternal pattern of some deep identities of civilizations, of cultures that could disappear on the surface and reappear after that from the deeper levels of the society. And that is how civilizations return in multipolar worlds, totally forgotten civilizations. There was no talk about civilization during some century of colonial modern time, and they have reappeared now at the end of the 20th century and begin to flourish once more in the 21st century. So multipolarity breaks. It is something like return of civilization. So and Huntington, who has predicted that, he has reserved the place for Japanese civilization. Right. But now, until now, we see no sign of that. No sign. Nothing confirms this hypothesis that I used to in the 90s in my geopolitical writings, but step by step, I was obliged to abandon that. So it should be something like Japanese Buddhist oceanic identity and civilization, but we see not any sign of it. And China, that was Rimland, now it is just Heartland. India, that was as well ex-colony of British, now it is becoming the civilization states. So the Islamic world is reaffirming its sovereignty. So we see the signs, very clear signs of the return of the revival of the civilizations and its deep identities everywhere in Africa, but nothing of the kind in Japan. So maybe we don't see something that is going on in the Japanese society, but from abroad, from outside, no sign. And nothing, because what Japan does today, it is just to follow the agenda of the globalists and faithfully accomplishing its the orders of the masters. So against China, against not so much against Russia, but hostile to Russia, and that is a kind of total absence of any shade, any elements, smallest elements of sovereignty in the relation with globalist West. But still, I believe that return of Japanese civilization is possible in some turn of the history, but obviously not now.
There's an interesting phenomenon occurring now in Japan. There is exactly what you just described, Professor. There is a return of Japanese civilization, but the mainstream media, the globalist establishment, suppresses it completely, and they do it in the same way as is done in my country, the United States. Anyone who dares to speak of Japanese tradition is a fascist or a right-wing extremist or a Nazi or a conspiracy theorist. The same set of pejoratives that are used in the United States to blast or to criticize anyone who speaks of tradition. It's the same thing here, but the momentum is very strong. And so I'm hoping that when people come to learn about your work and the work of other traditionalists and conservatives and anti-globalists around the world, that there will be a connection. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm especially hopeful of when I see the rise of the global South, the so-called global South. You've often spoken of the long durée in your work, and I think it's also very important. The global South, I think of the global South, I think the term is far too pedestrian. The global South is, these are the peoples that have been cruelly and brutally exploited by the Anglo-Saxons, by the globalists, by the Atlantean civilizations for 500 years. And finally, they're able to regroup and reassert their civilizational power. Japan, at one time, as you know, before it was conquered by the Anglo-Saxons, it fought on the side of the global South. It fought on behalf of the colonized peoples in Asia. Do you see any hope maybe that Japan will at least reawaken to its former alignment with these colonized peoples? Do you think that some spark will maybe arise in the Japanese consciousness, saying that we used to be on the side of the Africans and the Southeast Asians and so forth?
So first of all, we could not exclude nothing. So Japanese civilization for sure existed. Japan can sooner or later return to the stage of the history, and it could redefine its relation to the main players. Today, there is out of the question, because no sovereignty, no definition, no freedom to define relations to anybody. So everything is decided outside of Japan today. So we could not dream that Japan could appear in the global South without permission and without some special orders received from globalists. So today it is impossible. But if we presume that such thing as return of the Japanese civilization happens, so there will be very, very, very special dilemma in front of Japanese, because if they return to more or less the same strategy they used to perform between two world wars, so that will be a kind of Japanese imperialism. So that was a kind of Chiseigaku tradition, right? Geopolitical expansion in the Pacific, and declaring the kind of revival of the yellow race, as affirmed the Japanese politicians and intellectuals, they didn't accept the other in the Indonesia, in the Malaysia, in the China, and as the real partners. So they regarded this a bit imperialistic, because that was a kind of imitation of the Western imperialism. So they treated, for example, Japanese, they treated Chinese as the lowest than themselves and the other. So that was a kind of not yellow race solidarity and fairness, but something and something imperialist. And that is possible, that this spirit, imperialist, new Japanese spirit would revive. That is quite possible. After regaining the sovereignty, not before, before nothing. So a global South today is much more than the yellow race. That is some. That is global tendency, and we could consider Russia to be the part of the global South, because Russia is fighting against the imperialist hegemony of the globalist West. But I think that Japanese mind turning into sovereignty, rediscovering, reaffirming its sovereignty, could as well could find something like Kyoto School or Eurasianism or multipolar or force political theory promoted historically. So that is idea that there are a plurality of civilizations, and we need to find a natural borders or frontiers of such civilizations in order to reorganize the balance of the world, not on the principle of colonialism and imperialism, and on the equal and fair principles of mutual respect. That will give to Japanese civilization to develop, to flourish, but not at the expense, not on the expense of Chinese growth or Indian growth. So that, or for respecting the smaller identities of the region in the Pacific Ocean, in the Malaysia. So Japanese could find its glorious and very important place in the structures of the multipolar world. But in order to that, first of all, you need to gain sovereignty. Second, you need to reaffirm cultural identity, in the sense, I think, of Kyoto schools, who understood the challenge of the modernity and tried to respond on that. Suzuki, Nishida, Nishitani, other very, very brilliant minds, much very close to us, to Eurasianists. They weren't imperialists. They were just cultural patriots and traditionalists. Suzuki as well proposed to restoring the dignity of the Zen Buddhist culture, and opening Suzuki has opened that for West as well. So it's very important. So a restoration of the Shinto and the glorious Tenno, glorious emperor. So all that, that is second element after regaining the sovereignty. And third, to find the way how to cope with the other civilizations, so without using imperialism. So it is three challenges. First of all, political independence and the regaining of sovereignty. Second, regaining of civilizational identity. It's quite a different thing. Japanese logos, a kind of logos of Japan. And third, to try to inscribe Japanese civilization in the context of multipolar world, avoiding direct confrontation. So, but I think that we need to prepare the future now. because when the future comes, it is too late to prepare something. So I could not judge either there is a kind of subject of dialogue in Japan. It seems to me that it begins to appear. I have some Japanese friends. I understand their very special position in front of Russia that is considered to be enemy. So I wouldn't push these relations. It should be organic. But I think that if our ideas about multipolarity, fourth political theory, Eurasianism, traditionalism, they could be introduced to Japanese reader, that sooner or later the results will be very important, because Japanese has its own tradition, not trying to imitate Russian tradition, but returning to Japanese tradition. When I was in Japan, I have spoken in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that long ago, and they have asked me, you want us to replace American dominance by Russian dominance? And I have answered, you got me totally wrong. Nothing of the sort, because I suggest you to replace American globalist dominance by your total independence from them and from us as well. And that is sincere. I'm not trying to convince to you to change the master. A geopolitical suggestion for Japanese is to return to be masters of yourselves and nothing else. So that is totally sincere. And the same thing I am repeating to Western European friends. It's obvious. So, for example, it is not exchange of one hegemony against the other. So that is the decline or refuse to hegemonic imposition of outer rule and return to independence and identity, basing on the traditional values of Japanese, in this case, civilization. The same we could repeat to all other civilizations. We should not replace American values by Russian values. We suggest to replace globalist anti-values by Japanese real traditional values. Very different from Russian. That is important, or Islamic, or Indian, or Chinese, different. So the civilization, any real civilization possesses its own values. They are unique, and we should learn how to respect them, including when they contradict or simply don't coincide.
This is fascinating. I know you're a very busy man. If it's okay, I'd like to ask you just one final question.
Okay.
This would be, you mentioned the Kyoto School, and I've been long and fascinated by the Kyoto School, and especially by a wartime conference done along those same lines. It was about overcoming modernity, how to overcome modernity. It sounds as though the answer to that question, how do we overcome modernity, the people, the Japanese at the time were trying to overcome modernity by militarily defeating the United States. But it sounds as though the answer to that question might be the multipolar world, that modernity is a totalizing ideology, and it's essentially an American ideology, a Washington ideology. Everyone must be American. You've written about this in your books many times, about how globalism is basically world hegemony of the Anglo-Saxon. It sounds as though the multipolar world is the answer to the Kyoto School question about how to overcome modernity. Is that a fair assessment, or what do you think about that idea?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have studied as well Kyoto School, and I think that precisely the multipolar world, the theory of multipolar world, it is the concrete way to overcome modernity. Modernity is Western, globalist, universalist, based on atomistic, materialist, atheist, universal, so-called universal criterion on the individual, and all of that is the kind of ideological hegemony, and based on military and political and economic domination. So, but without such ideology, hegemony could not exist, according to Gramsci, left wing author Antonio Gramsci. Hegemony is first of all in the mind. So hegemony is the phenomenon of the cultural expansion. So right. If you expand your criterion, your ideas, so you create the atmosphere to penetrate and to put under control the civilizations, the peoples, and the countries in the political, economical, and military way. So Kyoto School started to think how we can overcome modernity as hegemony in an intellectual sense, first of all. And that was philosophical school, and that was very correct. And they had the answer. The answer was we need to return to eternal Japanese value of Shinto, of Buddhism, and to our culture, traditions, ideas, to our logic, to our philosophy, to our art, our ethics. And we need to affirm their dignity and sovereignty in front of Western values. And that was the essential. And after that, overcoming modernity could be translated into military power, economic autarky, independence, and so on. So autonomy. So, but all the mechanical, purely material means should be just the tools nothing but the tools of this intellectual, epistemological, philosophical sovereignty. That was overcoming the modernity. But theory of multipolar world is the same, but distributed evenly for all civilizations. So that is a kind of summarizing of Kyoto School invitation to win overcome modernity, but adjusted to Islamic world. Modern day Iran is the way how you, being Iranian, Shia, and Muslim, how you overcome modernity, how to overcome modernity. China, paradoxically now, with the communist rule, is going to overcome modernity, to control modernity, to rule over modernity, ride the tiger. Because the Chinese society is Confucianist, is traditional, against all the appearances. So they are going their way, their own way, to overcome modernity. Modest India, Kharab, I recently was there. So they are on the totally new path of decolonization, decolonization of mind, as Modi has said. So decolonizing Indian mind, it is the way to how overcome the Western colonial modernity, Anglo-Saxon modernity, and how to return to eternal Indian, eternal roots. So we see the same in Africa and Latin America. So that is the global phenomenon. And I think that Japanese history has precisely these very clear intentions and tendencies how to do that in Japan, and what kind of values and what kind of strategies in philosophy, in metaphysics, in logic, because Nishitani has proposed Buddhist logic against the Western ones, a logic that is based on the species. So species as something that is not just nominalist classificational elements of the things, but the species that live in the things. That is realism, Aristotelianism, but abandoned by the West in favor of nominalism. So I think that is everything is very, very interesting, but Kyoto School has disappeared. So I tried to find the traces of it, I didn't succeed in that, but I think that nothing disappears forever. And I think that precisely, you are totally right, absolutely right, in the context, in the form of multipolar theory of multipolar world and the multipolarity, the Japanese could continue its search of how to overcome the modernity. We know that modernity is overcome somehow by postmodernity, but it is inside and not outside of the global Western paradigm. It is the kind of decay, final decay of modernity in postmodernity. But what we suggest in the fourth political theory in the Eurasianism is overcome modernity by the return to the eternity. From the time that is disaggregating, decomposing, the time decomposes itself, and it could not be cured with the time. It should be cured with the eternity and something much more stable. And that was one of the results of Kyoto School researchers in that sense. So I would be very happy if in Japan could appear something like that. That will be more or less the Eurasianism of fourth political theory, something like that. But because I am inspired by Kyoto School, and that would be logical. Heidegger was inspired by some Zen or Chinese traditional Eastern way to treat the things, the relations. Existentialism is much closer to some traditional Buddhist or Taoist Taoist doctrine. So we influence each other, and it's time to conservative and traditionalists of all over the world to accept that our mutual influence, it is not the influence of Russian. We are influenced, and we continue to develop the same attitude. So I am very grateful for Japanese tradition and I am under influence of the Kyoto School and the invitation to overcome modernity. That is why what I am following. So it is the kind of order that I have received from these great thinkers of Japan, and I try to fulfill that with the loyalty of the samurai.
Professor Dugin, it's been an honor to speak with you, sir. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a good day, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.